Oyez, 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 the Honorable Appellate Court, 5th District, State of Illinois, is now in session. The Honorable Justice Cates presiding, along with Justice Welch and Justice Vaughn. The first case this morning is 522-0202, People versus Jeffrey Chisholm. Arguing for the defendant appellant is Chris Seeloff. Arguing for the state appellee is Adam Trejo. Each side will have 10 minutes for their argument. The appellant will also have 5 minutes for rebuttal. Please note only the clerk is permitted to record these proceedings.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, Your Honors.
Mr. Seeloff, you go first. Are you ready to proceed?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right, you may do so when ready.
Your Honors, counsel, may it please the court. My name is Assistant Appellate Defender Chris Seeloff, and I represent the defendant appellant, Mr. Jeffrey Chisholm. This case represents a figurative death by a thousand cuts, as the ineffective assistance started pre-trial and continued through to the eventual motion to withdraw as counsel. These errors piled up and created an insurmountable obstacle to Mr. Chisholm receiving a fair trial. The circuit court should have recognized the complete breakdown in the attorney-client relationship and appoint a new counsel at either the Krankel hearing or the motion to withdraw. Instead, because it erred in denying both Mr. Chisholm's Krankel claims and Carando's motion to withdraw, Mr. Chisholm respectfully requested this court vacate his conviction and remand for the appointment of new counsel to investigate his case. Turning first to the ineffective assistance claims that Mr. Chisholm raised at the Krankel hearing, he first alleged that Carando did not investigate his case, did not file motions to quash arrest and suppress evidence pre-trial, did not explain his homelessness to the jury during the trial, and would not submit any exhibits or evidence during the trial on his behalf. Turning to that first claim I mentioned, the failure to investigate the case, I want to highlight this one because it really is the heart of all of Mr. Chisholm's ineffective assistance claims throughout his time in the circuit court and now in the appellate court. There, as I'm sure we can all agree, there is no excuse for failing to investigate a defendant's case. And Mr. Chisholm presented evidence that Carando failed to do a thorough investigation of all aspects of his case, as denoted by the other claims that I listed at the Krankel hearing. Turning first to failing to file a motion to quash arrest and suppress evidence, there was a legitimate question as to whether the search warrant was based on appropriate testimony from police officers, as Mr. Chisholm raised that the officers perjured themselves in presenting the evidence for the search warrant, but Carando never followed up on this. In fact, Mr. Chisholm's initial counsel, Tom Moyer, had said that he intended to subpoena the confidential informant that formed the basis for the search warrant because he also believed that there was an insufficient basis for the search warrant. However, after he withdrew and Carando stepped into the case, not only was the confidential informant ultimately not subpoenaed, but he was never discussed again by Carando, let alone investigated further. That she investigated that confidential informant, as was clearly the strategy before she entered the case, she may well have discovered more evidence to support Mr. Chisholm's claim, and his arrest may have been quashed and the evidence suppressed. As for failing to explain Mr. Chisholm's homelessness to the jury, failing to do so prevented the jury from hearing evidence that he was registered at a different address than the home that was searched, and along with the motion to quash arrest and suppress evidence, would have injected further reasonable doubt into this case. Finally, his final claim raised at the Krankel hearing that Carando would not submit exhibits or evidence. The evidence he wanted her to present was the confidential informant and evidence of his homelessness, as discussed above. These claims alone should have been enough for the circuit court to at least grant new counsel to investigate the case. As this court and opposing counsel, I'm sure, is well aware, appointing counsel at a Krankel hearing does not necessarily mean that Carando would have been dismissed from the case. However, new counsel would have been appointed to investigate, and if there were claims with merit, to go through with that, and potentially then eventually a finding of ineffective assistance. But this was not, she's gone because she screwed up and he needs a new trial. Granting Krankel counsel would have simply been, there's a arguable doubt, which is a standard that we apply to Krankel claims. And based on the claims he raised, there was arguable doubt here as to Carando's effectiveness. Furthermore,
how do you know, Mr. Seeloff, that Carando didn't investigate and find out that CI was not worth calling?
Because, Your Honor, her, based on A, Mr. Chisholm's claims at the Krankel hearing and every other instance after that, including the withdrawal hearing, Mr. Chisholm said that every time he would present evidence to Carando that he would like investigated, the only answers he received were no, that she told him that she was not going to investigate the case, that he should fire her if he doesn't like her representation, that she believed that he was guilty, that he should just take a plea deal because otherwise he's going to go to prison for a very long time. And also, Carando never denied that she did not investigate the confidential informant, or that she, that the motion to quash arrest and suppress evidence didn't have a basis. The only reason for not filing that motion was that she believed that it would fail. But there's no, she didn't actually ever discuss the investigations she took into it. It was just a conclusory statement about the ultimate success of the motion, which, based on Mr. Chisholm's claims and the evidence available in the record, shows at least arguable neglect of the case. In addition to the Krankel hearing, there were claims that were apparent on the record, though not affirmatively raised by Mr. Chisholm. The state takes issue with Mr. Chisholm raising these claims in his brief, saying that there is no case law allowing a defendant to raise new Krankel claims for the first time on appeal. However, a circuit court is allowed to rely on its memory of a counsel's performance at trial when ruling on a Krankel motion, and these additional claims were meant to show that the circuit court could have relied on its memory of these additional instances of ineffective assistance in ruling on the Krankel motion, and also to show what the appointment of new Krankel, a new counsel at the Krankel hearing, would have ultimately resulted in. To that end, additional claims available on the face of the record include that Carando did not sever count two from counts one and three, count two being an unlawful possession of a weapon by a felon charge, which severing that charge might have been incredibly beneficial and potentially resulted in an acquittal on the other charges that were severed. Additionally, Carando did not excuse juror Ivory, who during voir dire said, "I have finals this week through the week of trial. I can't get them rescheduled. I haven't been able to get them rescheduled. I'm not going to be able to pay attention to the trial. I'm going to be too concerned about potentially failing my final semester of senior year and losing out on my job opportunities." Carando also did not object to Detective Sneed's characterization of the room that was searched as belonging to Mr. Chisholm, when the whole theory that Carando was raising was that not only were these not Mr. Chisholm's things in the room, but it wasn't his room. So she allowed Detective Sneed to effectively tell the jury, actually, as like a matter of fact, it is his room. A more competent attorney in that position would have simply objected and pointed out this was the whole contested issue in this case. And finally, during its closing argument, the state shifted the burden of proof to Mr. Chisholm by arguing to the jury that Mr. Chisholm never put anybody else in that room. He never said it was anybody else that did it. Criminal defendants have the presumption of innocence through to the end of the trial. The state cannot require a defendant to prove themselves innocent because it is the state's burden of proof to prove a defendant guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. Had Krankel counsel been appointed, they also could have raised this issue. By the time of the motion to withdraw, the circuit court had all this information available to it. Additionally, Carando herself had moved to withdraw, citing the breakdown in communication. Her claims were that Mr. Chisholm was creating outbursts at trial, although from my review of the record, the only potential outburst I can find was one instance where Mr. Chisholm said objection in the middle of court. She's more likely referring to is his repeated requests made during breaks outside the presence of the jury to have Carando withdrawn because, as he kept stating over and over and over again, and eventually again at the Krankel hearing, and then again at the motion to withdraw, she's not listening to anything I have to say. She's only telling me no. She tells me to hire somebody else if I don't like her, to only take a plea deal, that I'm going to prison for the rest of my life. It's also clear that Mr. Chisholm's repeated pleas for anybody to please pay attention to his case were taken personally by Carando during, and this was revealed at the motion to withdraw hearing when discussing the ARDC complaint that Mr. Chisholm filed against her. She said, he wrote everybody. I think he's written everybody involved. I don't know if the court reporter got a letter. I wouldn't be surprised if they did, because he's written many letters. The evidence shows that Mr. Chisholm, from the time Hirano entered his case until this appeal, has been begging for anybody to please just look through the record, look through the case, and please get me another attorney who will actually pay attention to me. Hirano's response was, man, this guy likes to complain. I think that the circuit court had plenty of evidence before it at both the Krankel hearing and the motion to withdraw, and the fact that it didn't appoint new counsel at either stage was an abuse of discretion. With the remaining time, if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Do you think that the ARDC complaint should be dispositive of whether a lawyer is allowed to withdraw?
Well, so an ARDC complaint can obviously be an impetus for a defense attorney to file a motion to withdraw. And while it is true that an ARDC complaint standing alone does not provide a sole basis for a circuit court, it does not require, I should say, a circuit court to grant a defense counsel's motion to withdraw. And the state argues this as well in its response brief, citing to People versus Jackson and People versus Childress. This language goes that in those cases goes on to say that when there is an ARDC complaint, the circuit court is required to inquire into the details of that complaint to determine whether it is a strong basis to withdraw. And the circuit court did not do that in this case. It knew of the ARDC complaint because both Mr. Chisholm and Carando discussed it, but it never asked about the details. And its only explanation in denying the motion to withdraw was to cite effectively that language without citing to the case. It said the ARDC complaint standing alone is not enough for me to grant this motion to withdraw. So the circuit court, while the state is correct that that is the legal standard, the language goes on in a way that the state doesn't cite to in its brief, and the circuit court did not properly inquire into that claim.
So when should the circuit court have inquired into that claim?
At the motion to withdraw. It was Carando, when Carando put in the motion to withdraw citing the ARDC complaint, the court was put on written notice that it had to inquire into that claim. And it did not, at least my review of the record shows that it did not, either orally at the motion to withdraw hearing or in any written order afterwards. And so the fact that it didn't show goes against that case law cited by both Mr. Chisholm and the state.
Okay, thank you. Justice Welch, any questions?
No questions.
Justice Vaughn?
No questions, thank you.
All right. Mr. Trejo, is that how you pronounce it correctly?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. All right. Would you like to proceed?
Yes. May it please the court, counsel Adam Trejo, on behalf of the people of the state of Illinois. Defendant, in presenting his argument on appeal, is really tying pieces together from different hearings and kind of presenting them as information that was presented at the Krankel hearing. Here, the defendant made multiple motions to have the chief public defender of Jackson County removed from his case multiple times. And during one of the times, the trial court even found that the defendant was attempting to obstruct justice. So when the defendant notes that defendant had made statements that the chief public defender of Jackson County had told him, you can fire me, that information wasn't at the Krankel hearing. But at a prior hearing to that, the public defender denied making those statements. It's very important to really zone in on what occurred at the Krankel hearing. And at the Krankel hearing, the defendant made vague, superficial claims and didn't really flesh them out. And I'd like to note that the defendant isn't arguing that the trial court didn't conduct a proper inquiry. He's just saying that the trial court manifestly erred in concluding that this shouldn't continue further. For example, the defendant at the Krankel hearing said, he didn't investigate my case. What does that mean? That's conclusory. That's vague. Defendant didn't flesh this out. Now, at the hearing, the public defender did indicate.
Didn't he also raise the issue about the search warrant at the Krankel hearing?
Yes, and again, the state would like to note that the search warrant is not within the record, but the search warrant contained information. Again, the trial court denied these claims because it also concluded that this was a matter of trial strategy. And at a preliminary hearing, one of the agents testified that they had a confidential informant conduct controlled purchases at the residency from the defendant. And introducing the search warrant as the defendant wanted at trial would have introduced evidence to the trial fact of uncharged prior drug transactions with the defendant ultimately. And that would have prejudiced the defendant because he was being charged with unlawful possession of controlled substances. So why would his attorney want to introduce the confidential informant and have the jury hear information regarding prior drug transactions that happened 1 month before the execution of the search warrant?
And well, this would be at a motion to suppress, which would be outside the presence of a jury.
Correct. And when the defendant stated this as one of his claims, he never identified the basis. He never indicated why he believed that his attorney should have filed a motion to suppress evidence based on an insufficient warrant. There's no basis stated on behalf of the defendant here. And again,
isn't that the whole point? Is he failed to investigate that issue?
That she failed to investigate?
She failed to investigate.
There's no information within the record that she didn't investigate that.
Said she did.
And that's not required by the case law. The case law indicates that the trial court may question the attorney, but is not required to.
Do you think the trial court did a good job on the Krankel hearing in this case?
Well, it's an inquiry, and that's not the issue raised by the defendant. I'd really like to make this clear. If the defendant believed that the trial court didn't conduct this inquiry correctly, he could have raised that issue, and that issue was not raised on appeal. And I noted that within the state's brief. The defendant is simply arguing that based on the information collected, it should have advanced to the second stage and it should have appointed an attorney. The defendant is not arguing that the inquiry was insufficient, and that argument has been forfeited.
The fact that she failed to sever the weapons charge from charge.
That issue was never raised at the Krankel hearing. And as I stated in the brief, there's no case law indicating that a defendant has to raise, it can raise new Krankel issues. Again, the issue is whether the trial court manifestly erred in denying these Krankel claims. How can this court conclude that the court manifestly erred in denying claims that were never before the court? If defendant wanted to bring those claims on appeal, he could have claimed ineffective assistance of counsel, a brand new one, and that would have brought the issue before this court. The defendant did not.
What about the motion to withdraw and the fact that the attorney is now saying, Ms. Carando is now saying, I can't work with him. He's filed an ARDC complaint. She's obviously upset by the language that she's saying. He's written letters to everybody. Why wouldn't you let an attorney withdraw under those circumstances?
Well, because the motion was asking for an extreme remedy. The chief public defender was asking not only herself to be removed, but her entire office.
She made a comment that everybody should be removed, but that really wasn't before the court. What was the court was just her motion.
And again, the issue, again, the standard of review is an abuse of discretion. It's not de novo. Could the trial of court have granted a new attorney? Yes, but is that an abuse of discretion? No, for the following reasons. The attorney had filed a motion for a new trial. She was waiting to argue it. And the sole basis for Filing a motion to withdraw was just a reaction to the defendant filing an ARDC complaint against her. And within that motion, she stated that the ARDC review board indicated that the complaint was unwarranted. And the public defender is an officer of the court, and the trial court was permitted, allowed to take her word that this was the finding by the review board.
Wait, really? I mean, without any letter or evidence of any kind, the court didn't have to make any further inquiry except upon the representation of the attorney who says she needs to get out?
Again, she is an officer of the court, and yes, and as an officer of the court, the trial court was permitted to take the motion and its contents as being truthful. But as the state noted in its brief, the fact that a defendant has filed an ARDC complaint against an attorney does not by itself justify granting a motion to withdraw, especially at this late stage of the proceedings.
But isn't Mr. Seeloff correct that your case citation says that the court should make further inquiry? That the ARDC complaint alone is not enough, but there should be some inquiry by the court?
Well, again,
is that what the case law says?
Again, it's good practice to further inquire, but is it unreasonable to deny that motion and to grant the entire office to be removed? No, absolutely not.
Wait, that doesn't the fact that she said her entire office should be removed further indicate the fact that she should be allowed to withdraw? I mean, there are other attorneys that are standby attorneys that the circuit court has available to it, even if you accept your argument.
And no standby attorney was identified within the motion. I think it would have been different.
Well, the motion didn't ask for her whole office to be removed.
It did. I could pull up the motion. It did. It asked for the entire office to be removed.
Okay.
And no standby counsel was identified within that motion.
And you don't think that with that motion before the court, as an officer of the court, as you say, that
yes,
the court should have allowed her to withdraw? You have an ARDC complaint. She says she can't get along. She says her whole office should be allowed to withdraw. And you don't think that's enough?
No, the fact that, again, there's case law that there's bickering between an attorney and a defendant is not sufficient enough to warrant granting this type of motion. Absent more, there is no abuse of discretion in this case. Absent further questions, the people of the state of Illinois respect.
What about the fact that she didn't remove the juror?
Again, this claim was not raised at the Krankel inquiry. And as the state pointed out in its brief, the trial court asked the defendant, are these all the claims that you want to bring? And the defendant said, yes, there are no other claims I am bringing. If the defendant wanted these claims before the court, the defendant could have briefed a separate issue claiming ineffective assistance of counsel. But as the defendant has framed the issue, this court cannot conclude that the court manifestly erred in denying Krankel claims that were never before the court.
Could this court find that the failure to appoint new counsel was the basis for the defendant not raising these additional claims? In other words, had another attorney been appointed, it would have been revealed that the search warrant, the CI, those issues should have been raised under an assistance of counsel?
That's speculation. I can't speculate to what another attorney would have raised.
No, my question is,
additionally,
could another attorney have raised those issues, assuming they existed? An effective assistance of counsel claim.
Yes, and as I said, the defendant himself could have raised it on appeal by filing a separate ineffective assistance of counsel claim.
Okay. Justice Welch, any questions?
No questions.
All right, Justice Vaughn.
No other questions. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Trejo. Mr. Seeloff, you have rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor. briefly, state asked for a citation about the ARDC complaint requiring the circuit court to inquire into the details of the complaint that was cited in Mr. Chisholm's opening brief and again at the reply brief. It's People versus Jackson, 243 Ill App 3rd at 1035 to 1036. As to the point of the state making much about Carando asking for the whole the chief public defender asking for the entire public defender's office of the county to be taken off the court, the case. The state citing to the ready, willing, and able standard in People versus Volberding from the second district in 2022. However, in the reply brief, as Mr. Chisholm noted, that standard doesn't apply. That standard only applies in this case in cases where privately retained counsel withdraws, and it is uncertain whether the defendant will retain new private counsel or is asking for new court-appointed counsel. People versus Abernathy, also from the second district 12 years earlier, cited to the public defender statute and the authority of circuit courts to appoint, as Justice Cates noted, not only the public defender's office, but standby counsel. To that end, Carando would have known about this, which is probably why she included it in her motion to withdraw, that the whole office be removed, because she had previously served as contract public defense counsel for Jackson County before working for the public defender's office officially as the chief public defender. And finally, just a few points about the state raises about the level of evidence available at the Krenkel hearing itself, at the motion withdrawal hearing itself. The state says that Mr. Chisholm is trying to pull all these pieces of evidence together from disparate parts of the record. The only things he raised at the Krenkel hearing were X, Y, and Z. That's true, but again, the fact of the matter is the Krenkel hearing is about all of the representation up to the point of the Krenkel hearing. To say that the only thing that could ever be considered at a Krenkel hearing is the statements of legal laymen, non-legal experts like Mr. Chisholm, who don't have access to the transcript, don't have the legal education to understand all of the totality of the evidence that they could level against their defense attorney for an ineffective assistance claim, would effectively make Krenkel, at the very least, much weaker than the standards that are there. And as Justice Cates pointed out, and as Mr. Chisholm pointed out, both in his opening brief and in his reply brief, those additional claims apparent on the face of the record are evidence that, at the very least, had Krenkel counsel been appointed, then more ineffective assistance claims would have been seen. Again, the question of whether Mr. Chisholm can raise these claims at all. In the reply brief, he did note that he did not cite to case law in support of that. However, in the reply brief, he did make mention that he had cited to People versus Moore previously in the opening brief, which does list out those three standards that a circuit court can rely on, including questioning defense counsel, questioning the defendant, and relying on its memory of defense counsel's performance at trial. And again, those were not necessarily put forward as substantive claims that were at the Krenkel hearing, although they could have been considered by the circuit court, but more so to show the prejudice resulting from the denial of the Krenkel decision. Finally, just as the matter of trial strategy and there not being enough information in the record to demonstrate the claims. And if Mr. Chisholm wanted to raise these additional claims, he should have just brought a separate ineffective assistance claims. To that, Mr. Chisholm would argue, there's only so many pages that this court will allow a defendant to file in his opening brief. In just raising the Krenkel claims and the motion withdraw issue, he had already almost reached the page limit. And therefore, there simply wasn't enough room to bring all of the additional claims against Krenkel, against Carando, which is sort of the heart of the argument here. There was so much that was wrong in this case. As I noted in my intro, in my initial time, this was death by a thousand cuts. She didn't come out and tell the jury, by the way, my guy's guilty and you shouldn't believe anything he says. She did this by saying no repeatedly to every question, by not presenting evidence that he asked for, by all the little million little things that add up to this mountain of ineffective assistance. And that's why he's asking for new counsel to investigate the case.
Okay, your time has expired, Mr. Seeloff. Justice Welch, any questions?
No question.
All right, Justice Vaughn?
No questions, thank you.
All right, thank you, gentlemen, for your time here today. This matter will be taken under advisement. We'll issue an order in due course.